There are a lot of times I don't know what to say. In times like this week, when on Tuesday I got the call about Gretchen Hazel, and went up to the hospital to see Gary and Janie, Simon and Courtney, and Courtney's parents. In times like that, what do you say? There are no words. There aren't any words. As I was walking out of the hospital wing, I turned to the nurse who had welcomed me before I got there, and I asked her what she would do at a time like this. I said, "How do you speak? How do you speak into the kind of situation where there are no answers? How do you speak into the kind of situation when nothing you can say can make anything better? It's just not possible. How do you love in that space?" For a second, it looked to me like she was kind of caught deer in the headlights. Never been asked a question like that before. But she leaned over the desk and said with a sort of authority, "You have to just go in there and sit with them. You sit with them. You look into their situation. You become a part of their lives. Because everyone is different, and every situation is different. That's how you love in a time like this. You immerse yourself in that space." This morning, we're in our last week of the series on the DNA of the local church. In week one, we discussed how loving God is the most fundamental and foundational thing that we can do as a church. Our vision, we said, must first and foremost must be on God's face, must be on God's self. This is what Jesus means when he tells us that the first and greatest commandment of our lives is to love God. It's to love God. Last week, we pushed a little bit further into that command. We heard Jesus tell us that there's another commandment that goes right alongside of it, and that's that we should love our neighbors as ourselves. Our love for God connects to our love for neighbors in at least two ways, we said. First, it frees us up to love them. When we realize that we're all children of God, that we're all loved by God, we don't have to worry about constantly vindicating ourselves to each other. We can focus. We can focus our attention outside of ourselves and onto our neighbors. Second, our love for God connects. It connects to our love for each other in the sense that it gives us the strength to love our neighbors even when we have no strength, even when we're worn out, broken down. It gives us the strength to love them as we should. When we have our eyes firmly focused on the eternal source of truth and goodness and beauty, we begin to see what it really means to be truly good and truly beautiful. And part and parcel, we come to find out, is that loving our neighbors comes out of our love for God. We love our neighbors like God loves them. So if our vision is to love God, then our mission is to love neighbor. Love God, love neighbor. These are the two things that make us who we are as a church. They define us as the Church of Jesus Christ. They color everything we do, from the way we worship, to the things that we teach, to the stuff we study, to the types of lives we leave inside these walls and outside of them. So we love God, and in turn, that shapes us into the kind of people that go out and love our neighbors well. We could stop there. But I think there's one more concept that we need to look at when it comes to talking about the DNA of the local church, and that's the nature of our action. So if our vision is to love God and our mission is to love our neighbors, how does that act into the world? How do we do that in the real world, down on the floor? What does it look like? I think it looks a bit like what we find out in that middle of Jesus' commandment, that we love with all of our heart, with all of our souls, with all of our minds, and with all of our strength. Heart, soul, mind, strength. I think when Jesus says that we love God with these things, he's saying that we love God with everything that we are. And I think it translates into our love for neighbor too, that we love our neighbors with everything that we are, just like we love God. After I asked that nurse in the hospital her advice on how to love well when there's nothing you can really say or do, I kept seeing her point all over the place this week. The notion that everything and everyone is different was right there. It always came before me. I realized last night it was there in my friend Brad, who works as an architect for a firm that designs a lot of medical offices and buildings. And for him, this idea of everything is different has played a massive role because he's had to pay a whole lot of attention to the seemingly random details that are involved in medical spaces. Like, where do you put the medicine cabinet? How high up in the room? What doors can open only one direction? And which of them need to be locked? And on what side? And he said, I never knew as an architect that all of a sudden I'd have all this random information about medicine. But he has to. And he has to know it intimately to know how to do his work. To know how to do his work. The attention to detail, he said, is extreme, but it's what it takes to do the job well. And then there's a story Jamie told me on Thursday about how one year he was teaching down in Kentucky, and he ran across a kid at his mom's school where he was teaching, and this kid was displaying a lot of these serious behavioral issues. Everyone who worked with this kid eventually just wrote him off as a lost cause. They grouped him with all the other lost causes. They lumped them in, labeled it. But then somebody took the time to sit down with him. And they spent a lot of one-on-one time around this kid. And it became clear that part of his problem was this different form of dyslexia that nobody had seen. He couldn't do the work because his mind wouldn't work that way. And so he was distracted, and it came out in these uncontrollable discipline ways. But once that was figured out, all of a sudden, it changed. His life changed. But it took attention, a lot of attention, a lot of effort, a good deal of skill. Not everybody could see this, but once they did, it changed his life. After a while this week, I began to notice that everyone I talked to had a story like this, or multiple stories like this, often from their own work. And they were all about how important it is to pay attention to the particulars. To pay attention to the particulars in any situation, because everyone is different, and every situation is different. We can't afford to stay on the outside. Brad couldn't afford to not look at the medicine stuff. Jamie's school couldn't afford to not dig into what is really going on with this kid. All right? I couldn't afford to not sit there and just hug Gary. What else do you do sometimes? We can't afford to stay on the outside. Like my nurse friend said, we've got to go in there, sit with them, enter into that situation, the heart of their lives, and see what they're going through. Because if we don't immerse ourselves into the lives of our neighbors, then chances are we are not really loving them as we can or as we should. So when Jesus says that we should love with all of our hearts and with all of our souls and with all of our minds and with all of our strength, he's saying we should love with absolutely everything we are. We should love with our whole selves. We can't hold anything back. This is what Jesus becoming human means, in essence. That God didn't hold back, but literally poured himself out into our lives and into our world to become one with us in order to know us inside and out. God literally emptied himself, Philippians 2 says, because that's what it took to love us, with his whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. When I was thinking about this, paying attention to the particulars, I was trying to think about what are some characteristics that this would look like. And I came up with three big ones. The first one is that it is slow. It's slow. This type of love is slow. We like to tell stories of love at first sight, but the fact of the matter is that's kind of Disney stuff. Real life, love is slow. All right? Past couple of weeks, Sarah and I have been challenged a little bit by Emma's behavior. She started to throw these random fits that we didn't know where they were coming from, and we didn't know what to do about it. And everything, especially I would do, which I'm the type of guy that thinks that I can rationalize everything away. So I sit down with Emma and I'm like, okay, Emma, let's talk about your fit. Let's talk about how this goes and what we're going to do. And if you see that your fit makes absolutely no sense, you will stop. And that works every single time. No, it didn't work at all. Not once. So Sarah sends me this article that she finds, and it talks about how, and this is probably a little bit of self-diagnosing and things like this, but it talks about how some children happen to be particularly anxious children. They're sensitive. We would call them oversensitive. Emma threw a fit once because she was upset about the name in a book. She didn't like the name, and this bewildered us, but she just didn't like the name. And what happened was we weren't slow with her. We weren't willing to immerse ourselves into what she was feeling. We, especially me, wrote it off. This is silly. You gotta stop. Don't you realize you're upset about a name? What she wanted to do, and what we finally asked her, she wanted us just to be there in the room. Not touching her, she said, but be there. So now we just be there. We sit in the room with her, and we show her that we're there, and then she takes her time, and eventually she calms down. And that's loving Emma at this point in time. Sometimes it's slow. Sometimes it's slow. The second characteristic of this type of loving action that we're called to as the church is that it's ever-changing. It's ever-changing. We know this from our own relationships, I think. The most obvious is relationships with our kids, relationships with our spouses. Sarah is a different person today than she was in 2008 when I married her. Right? Different person. In one sense, you could say that I did not marry this Sarah, right? I'm a different person. Love grows. Our relationships grow. We find out more about each other, all right? This thing takes time. It's slow like that, but it's ever-changing. And so we have to come into these spaces and be ever-changing too. Part of the idea that we have to pay attention to the particulars is that we have to pay attention to how things are actually working in the world today, in this space, in this time, in this situation. Really get down in the dirt. And when you do that, you start to see who people really are. And you start to see the situation for what it really is. And you start paying attention to the people's lives. And all of a sudden, a little bit more information about how do we love these people in this moment becomes clearer. But it's always changing. So we have to change with it. That's how it goes. The third characteristic of the type of loving action we're talking about today as a church is that it's humble. It stems from that last one. It's humble. When I would teach about attention and paying attention to the particular at UD, I would ask my students about the difference between love, true love, and infatuation. And they would tend to get this comparison because for some reason they all knew about infatuation. And they all knew how bad it could be. How bad it could be. And so we would talk about it, and they would really gravitate to this idea about how infatuation is like putting our own fantasy upon somebody else. We're treating the person we're infatuated with what we want them to be. We love what we want to love about them. And so some people can be a totally different person, and we love that totally different person. And then what this does is then all of a sudden we come to find out that when we realize, oh, that's not who they are, the light bulb comes on and love evaporates. Because it wasn't really love, right? It wasn't really love at all. So my students would get this. They'd seen it. They'd seen the pain and the hurt, all right? The deal about love and infatuation is real love is letting the other person be herself or himself. It's recognizing that they're an individual, that they're different from us. And it's loving them anyways. Not in spite of their differences, but in their differences. Loving the differences. But that's risky. It's scary. Why? Because it's uncontrollable. If I let you be you, then I have to open myself up to that. I have to open myself up to that. And that means you can impact my life. That means I can be hurt. But there's no other way to love. There was no other way for God to love than to become human. So those are the big three things that I think we focus on in our action as a church. How do we love God and neighbor? We love with our whole selves by paying attention to the particular. This is slow work, right? It's ever-changing work, and it's humble work, all right? You might be wondering, why aren't we giving specifics on what we're going about to do? That's because these things are going to be ever-changing and slow-coming, and we've got to enter into them as a people. And so this is going to be ongoing. We love God, we love neighbor, and we go into the world open and paying attention. Being immersed in each other's lives. Waiting to see how God is moving in us to love them. Amen.